You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach.
What's up, Mad World? Coach Sess coming at you, and we are talking about the principles of overload. And basically, what this principle represents in training is doing the things every day based on your time, your frequency, and your duration that gets you stronger and stronger for your particular event, all right, and works on the skills that you need to improve upon. But in the meantime, before we get to that, I do want to talk about some of the fighters who are coming up to Fight For It 20. So I'll touch upon that a little bit. I'll also talk about a subject that I'm hearing that's moving around in martial arts circles, especially amongst new coaches: imposter syndrome and why it happens. But let's start there a little bit. I've had a coach approach me and say that he didn't feel like he was a coach. He felt like he was a bit of an imposter. And I wanted to say, you know, all the casual stuff, have confidence, believe in yourself. But you know what? The truth be told is, it's a story he's telling himself. It's an imaginary world that he's inputting on himself. Nope, no one is doing it to him. He's doing it to himself, and it's 100% him. One thing you need to pay attention to is you need to be good at what you do, and you need to understand, how did you get here? How did you get into this position that you're in? You're good for a reason. There's a reason why you're good as you are. There's a reason why you do what you do. And when you're in my situation, when you're able to move around to so many different gyms and you see different coaches apply their training mechanisms, their thoughts, their ideas, what you realize at the end of the day is, oh, we all kind of do it a little bit differently. Yeah, nobody is really monopolizing the training scene to say, well, only I do it right. There's no one who's doing it better than the other guy. There's no one person who's exclusively got the market cornered. You don't have to worry about that. So go out and do your thing, because you've trained for a certain degree. You've gotten here somehow to do what you do. And for whatever reason, you're doing what you do. You're good at what you do. You get the results. That's all you should care about. That's all you should care about. You're getting the results. And believe it or not, you don't have to worry about whether or not you're a good coach. It's your students, your trainees, your fighters, whoever you work with, your clients. They're the ones that tell you whether or not you're a good coach, because they request you. They come back. They win. Look at the results. All right. And absolutely, for instance, there are levels to the game, as they say. You know, you can say, oh, I have a good coach in this regard, but he may not be able to get the same results in another format, in another genre. But here's how you'll know if he's a good coach or not. If he can do it, he'll do it. That's bottom line. If he can get you the wins or the results that you're looking for in other areas, he'll do it. But a good coach will say, hey, I'm a specialist in this area, but I do know other coaches who have better skills, but more time, better resources, and they will humble themselves and they will recommend that you go train with those people. That's what a good coach will do. He will not sit here and fake the funk, so to speak. He will not just try to pump up his ego. Has nothing to do with that. He will realize that other people out there that have other talents that are good as he is in what he does, but they just happen to be a little bit better in the things that they do. And he will recommend that you go visit these people. Nobody has all the time to do everything. Nobody has a monopoly on the entire world. So one of the keys about getting rid of imposter syndrome is to network. Network with other coaches. Network with other teams, network with other people who are in charge of training, so you can see that sometimes you all have different ways of reaching the same results. And there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, when it comes down to it, some of the things that you will learn when you kind of work with other coaches, you will learn that you have a different training method from them, but it takes the same amount of time to implement it and you get the same amount of results. So which process is right? Which process is wrong? Neither one of them. It's just that you have your particular tool that you like to work with. And from my perspective, that's absolutely okay. If you have the tools you like and they have the tools they like, one of the places you can always go to kind of get a good look at this and study things is in the music industry, especially when it comes to the musical engineer, especially with a lot of digital music. And you pull up their list of tools that they work with, you know, which equalizers they use, what type of speakers, what microphones. Every time you listen to them talk, and you can find a lot of these discussions online, but you will realize that some people say, oh, I work better in the morning. Some people say, oh, I have a regular schedule. I go home at 3, like a regular 9-to-5 job. Some people say, I don't get started until midnight. And you will notice that even on a personal level, that they are different, not just the equipment in the gym or in the room, I should say. You'll have some that says, you know, I'd rather a small studio. Some have larger studios. Some will prefer to have live instruments, but they'll all work differently. But what you will notice is, oh, but I like their music. And that's what it comes down to, is that they produce results. They're really good at getting results. So this whole idea of imposter syndrome really is up to the individual. And sometimes you have to be wary of not comparing yourself to somebody else, trying to do what they do, not understanding their process. There are a lot of coaches that I'm exposed to, and I enjoy their processes. Like I really like the fact they do certain things a certain way. They get certain results, but I can't pretend to mimic their work process because I don't understand all of their tools. To me, there's a certain stream of consciousness where you follow a certain process, you follow a certain path, you have certain ideas, certain techniques to get the results that you're looking for. Unless I ask them to give me the blueprint, I'm not going to have all of that information. I'm just not going to have it. So I don't even try to copy them, but I do admire them for their workflow, that stream of consciousness that they're on. And if you are one of those people, I'm going to warn you early now, don't just try to pick something randomly, like I like what this coach does and I like what this coach does, and just try to hodgepodge it. It's not going to work out for you. However, if you go to each coach because you need a certain tool, they have a certain tool that you need to work with. You have an athlete that you can't get to throw straight punches. Well, go to one coach and find out their method. Sometimes these methods are just simple things like, oh, you weren't paying attention. And that's all it is. So does it make you an imposter? And sometimes you have to consider the situation you're in. Coaches who actually have more people to deal with on the floor at any one given time, they might not be able to address all the issues that are happening in that room at the time. And so they're going to feel like they're missing things. Well, here's how you fix that problem. Bring in other coaches. Get an assistant coach. All right. There's a certain point in the school system where they will say, after 15 children in a classroom, you have to have an assistant for every additional 5. And I forget what the actual number is. It's been so long since my boys were in school, but they have to have another assistant. So, and most teachers aren't allowed to have more than, I guess, that 15 and one assistant. So then all the other kids have to be divided up into another situation. They go into another classroom. So if that's true, then we should be thinking along the same lines. I'm not saying everything in the school system is perfect, but we should be thinking along the same lines in our martial arts schools, not overloading the different instructors, because it's hard to keep an eye on 10 plus people. It is. When you get to 15, you're probably reaching and stretching your limit, especially if you're not working with them on a regular basis. You know, if this fluctuates from day to day, in terms of like you have your core 15, but then those faces change every day, or those numbers differ every day, that's when it's going to be a problem. And you're going to feel like you're not serving your community well. And that's why you're going to feel like an imposter, because you're not getting the results. 9 times out of 10, when I hear coaches talk about that imposter syndrome, it's usually because they're not getting the results. And from my perspective, it's absolutely okay, because not everything is supposed to be immediate. Some of the results you're looking for might take a year. That's just the developmental process. It's like when you put crops in the ground. They're not going to grow in 6 weeks. All right. So some things may take an entire summer. Some things may take an entire winter, depending on what you're trying to grow. But that doesn't mean that you're a failure. It's just that you've kind of jumped the gun a little bit and tried to reap the rewards way too soon. So don't beat yourself because you're not getting the rewards, or excuse me, the results that you think you should be getting. And talk to your students. Again, sometimes they will tell you which results they are actually getting while they're looking for the main result. Of course, that main result is what? Everybody wants to do it. Win. Everybody wants to win. But in the meantime, you might have that one athlete who's saying, I'm gaining confidence. Another athlete saying, oh, I'm losing weight. Another athlete saying, oh, I'm becoming smarter about this game. That's absolutely okay. It's absolutely okay that you have these little minor goals, these little secondary goals on the way to the big goal. So you just got to pay attention to the students. They're going to help you a lot. And that's another thing that I've seen where coaches feel like they're imposters, is that they don't have the ability to humble themselves to say, hey, you know what? I don't know everything, especially in mixed martial arts. I don't know everything, and I'm going to lean heavily on the people that I train with. I think, to me, it's just, that's one of the smartest things you can do, is be more concerned about creating an atmosphere to help you get over that imposter syndrome. Because where you are strong, one of your co-trainees, co-coaches, partner, training partners, or whatever, may be a little weak. And so you're going to supplement that. But that also works vice versa. They're going to supplement your weaknesses as well. If you talk to the people in your environment, you'd be surprised what they know, what they've experienced. And sometimes that's just a failing of the martial art world, where we actually don't know the people that we're serving. We don't. I find it troubling sometimes when I have come across instructors who don't know the names of the students in the room. The students who actually pay money to come train in that environment, you don't know their names. And these are the people that you're willing to put a belt on. These are the people you're willing to certify. These are the people you're willing to give that rub, pat on the back, go stand in that corner at a competition, whatever it is. You're putting all this on them, but you don't know their name. Start there. That's how simple it is. If you really want to attack imposter syndrome, start by having a relationship with the people that come to you for training. You should not just be accepting anybody and everybody as a student, and nor should they be accepting anybody and everybody for an instructor. And when you can build up this type of network, build up these types of trust, types of relationships and friendships, you know, that's when you're going to notice that, oh, so it's not about what I teach or even how I teach. It's about who I am as a person. And that's what you'll see. I honestly believe that a lot of coaches who own their own gyms, train their own teams. When they reach out to me, I don't believe that they call me for any other reason other than knowing how hard I'm going to work. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's more reasons. Some know, some want me because of my knowledge, my experience, association, friendship, you know, energy, a vibe that I bring to the room, but they know how hard I'm going to work. Most coaches know that I will push the limit because I like to win. I like to win more than anything. Like if there's anything that's my number one drive as an individual, it's my ability to chase the win. I look at a contest and I say, well, this is how you win that contest. This is all the ingredients. This is the conditions of the fight. This is how we chase that win. And then if there's anything secondary, it's going to be things like, oh, I've got X number of years in the game. Then you can even go beyond that and say, well, I've trained this fighter who's able to achieve this reward or this accolade. Then you can even go further and say, I'm known for, you know, being able to put a camp together, being able to reach out to several different fighters from around the state and say, hey, can you be in on this process? Can you be in on this? Yeah, I'm kind of known for being able to put the right people in the right place at the right time. So, but I still say the number one thing is they just know how hard I'm going to work. Even if I'm the assistant coach, they just know that, okay, he's going to be holding those pads. Like he's going to put in the rounds. He's going to make sure that fighter is getting the training that he needs. And that has helped me over the years just be good at what I do, get over anything that might feel like imposter syndrome. To be honest, I've never had that feeling because I've told the story before. I never tried to be the coach. All right. So the way it worked was guys would just say, hey, what are you doing? And I say, oh, I'm doing this. I'm training for a fight. And they would like some of the things that I was doing. They say, can you show me how to do X? Can you show me how to do Y? And I would just give them what I had based on what I knew at the time. And that's all you can ever really do. And I did it from an honest perspective. In other words, I was not trying to, I didn't have any agenda behind me. There was nothing they owed me. It was just, yeah, absolutely. Let me share this. Let me show you how to do this. And in the beginning, quite a few of those guys were able to improve their skills. And then the longer I stayed involved, the more I realized, oh, these guys want to fight. And so it changed the relationship, changed the perspective in terms of what I was doing. I was no longer just giving out martial art technique, which is usually a starting point when you train. You like to do, the first thing you like to do is say, this is how you do an elbow. This is how you do a knee. This is how you do a jump kick. This is how you do a spinning kick. This is how you do a takedown. So everything's mechanical. And mechanics are very important. But the longer you stay in the game, then you realize that you're looking at other modalities, such as this is how you manipulate distance. This is conditioning. This is speed. This is timing. This is what balance is all about. You start looking at the things that give mechanics the credit, you know, because the mechanics don't mean anything if you're weak. Mechanics don't mean anything if you can only do it once. Mechanics don't mean anything if you don't have the ability to get hit and keep going. So the longer you stay in the game, you start learning other aspects of the game. And to me, when you start to learn those other aspects, that's when you start to realize the speciality of every coach. You start realizing there are some coaches that are really killers when it comes to conditioning. You start realizing there are certain coaches that are killers when it comes to philosophy and strategy. You start to realize that certain teams do leg kicks better than anybody. They can do the other stuff, but it's just something special about their leg kicks because of the way they are trained, the environment that they're in, the equipment that they use. So basically, that's what it comes down to when it comes to being a good coach or what, you know, or being anything. So, because sometimes even when you're a fighter, you don't feel as if you're improving. You know, and sometimes it's just a mental thing. You think you're an imposter. And sometimes, that, again, you got to look at your environment. if you're in a room full of killers and you've never gone outside of that room, you probably don't know how good you are. You probably don't know how good you are. So sometimes you can feel a little intimidated, a little insecure in a good training room because you're around a bunch of monsters, you know. So basically, that's where I am on that topic. And, you know, and for all you senior coaches out here that are listening to this, you're never going to get rid of that question. You're never going to get rid of an athlete coming up to you, expressing, you know, feeling insecure. What do I do? I can't bear it. Help me, help me, help me. It's always going to be there. It's always going to be there.
Carolina Fight fans, get your popcorn ready for the most exciting local MMA event of the year, May 11th. Support your local Carolina MMA fighters as Paris Artis, 6-1 team rock out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, faces Jonathan Martin, 5-2 out of Carolina Combat Charlotte, North Carolina, in one of the most anticipated fights in Carolina history for the Fight For It lightweight title. Fight For It 20 will be one of the most exciting combat sporting events in local Carolina cage fighting history. Live cage fights Saturday, May 11th at the Kerr Scott Building in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Everyone knows that Bruce Lee was one of the most amazing martial artists who ever walked the planet. Today I'd like to share with you one of the tools he used to get there. When I was 17 and a half, I began training in Bruce Lee's martial art of Jeet Kune Do in the backyard gym of Dan Inosanto, who was Lee's assistant instructor in Los Angeles and one of only three people authorized by him to teach the art. For me, it was like winning the lottery. Bruce ignited my passion for martial arts when I was 11 years old and saw him in the Green Hornet television series. 6 years later, I was going to actually be studying his art. There was only one class. It was a private training group limited to 12 people at a time, and I was number 12. Not only was I the youngest of the group by far, even though I had several years of training in a couple of traditional arts, all of the other guys were high-level martial artists. Everyone knows.
Okay. So that was Chris Kent. And Chris Kent's a practitioner of Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do. He was talking about his experience getting into it. And one thing is kind of what I was saying earlier before I went off. The room, when you're in that room, sometimes you can feel like, oh man, I'm overwhelmed. I'm in awe. I'm shocked. Hey, you know what really matters? The work. I think to me, if I've ever had those feelings, if I've had any form of insecurity, doubt or whatever, I put them aside because I just go to work. And last night I was in Shell Shock BJJ and I don't remember her name, but she's fought in Bellator. Her name's Gabby, and she showed up. She had her coaches, and I had forgot that John had told me that they were going to show up on Thursday, and I didn't get involved in their session because I've been involved in high performance gyms before, where I've been on the floor, like in Roy Jones's gym one time, where Roy Jones is doing his thing in one corner, and there's other boxers who have their corner people or their trainers in another corner. And I was off doing my thing. So you realize that high performance people, you know, can be in the same room and still not necessarily have an engagement. And you realize, okay, so that means you got to do what? Focus on what you need to do, get your work done for that day. And when you're in a high level situation, if you listen to people like Daniel Cormier talk about some of the people that they've crossed at AKA, The Daniel gives you a good visual that Khabib's not there every day. You know, Makhachev is not there every day. Luke Rockhold is not in the gym every day. You know, we know Frank Shamrock used to be part of AKA back in the day. And no matter who you're thinking of, whatever champion, they're not always there in every camp. Certain athletes like certain athletes. And I think about the guys at Team Rock Fayetteville that I've trained over the years and all the guys that became champion. I can honestly say, no, this champion was not in this champion's training camp. And that doesn't mean that they didn't spar every once in a while. That doesn't mean that they didn't, get a couple rolls in, or do some training together outside the gym or meet up at certain places. It just means that for the 6 to 8 weeks or whatever training camp was, this person may not have been there for the entire time. So once you get over the eyeballs looking at you inside the room and you realize the only thing that really matters is your eyeballs on the work, your focus on the work. That's what really matters. So let me talk about work. One of the biggest principles that gets misunderstood in the world of combat sports is the principle of overload. The problem with the way most people think overload works in a standard sense is just reps upon reps upon reps, 1,000 reps, right? And there's in a basic sense, when you're being introduced to new information, you're performing new behaviors, performing new movements for the first time, 1,000 reps might not hurt anything. But continue repetition, then you start to get overuse. And so you have to look at, how do I keep the system, I don't want to say overloaded, because we don't want to think of it in terms of like something negative, but we keep the system in shock, in the system fresh. We keep the system ready, always on standby to perform by doing different things that get us the same results. Kind of like what I was saying earlier about two coaches having two different training mechanisms, but they basically get the same results. So your training in regards to overload works the same way. You really can't keep doing the same thing before you develop some wear and tear on your body that you just can't recover from. So one of the things that people will often do is go to, and it's the tried and true, and everybody knows it, it's the old weights. Everybody wants to start lifting weights. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with lifting weights. There's nothing wrong with adding on the poundage. But however, you need to be wary of which type of exercises in the world of weights are you going to perform. So you have to look at your combat sport. You have to look at your area of weaknesses. So in other words, if you're lifting weights because, you know, your ability to create space because your opponent is, you know, got you in a side mount and you need to create space so that you can work your underhook. So you're probably going to mimic something like a bench press to do that. That doesn't mean the bench press is the best thing for you. But I will say, okay, yeah, you can use it. It's a start, but then you have to ask yourself, well, how much poundage? Because you have your own body weight to account for. And also remember, the opponent who is engaging with you might just be laying across your body. He may not be holding you down. He may not be striking you. And all of these things create different forces, different energies. So these are something, some things you have to think about. So let's say your opponent is heavier. Now, there's very few fights where you're going to have mixed match weights, but let's say the opponent is heavier and is more centered. Okay. One thing you know, if you do jiu-jitsu, you need to press that person. You need to move your hips. So is bench pressing going to allow you to move your hips? Not necessarily. So maybe if you laid on a floor like a mat, you have a mat, a grappling mat under you, and you're kind of doing kettlebell presses, you know, with each hand has its own weight. That way you're allowed to shrimp your hips while you're pressing the weight up to mimic the extra forces across your arms and shoulders and still being able to work your mechanics. So you can see how overload training works, but how you need to modify it just a little bit for your specific problem area in combat sports. And yeah, you're going to end up doing some things just because, well, it seems cool to do, you know, I work these mechanics all the time, but just because you work them all the time doesn't mean you have a problem. So you want to make sure that you're not spending all of your time working on the wrong thing. But I just want to give an idea of like how weights can be used to help overload your system to make you more efficient and more effective. But to be honest, in order to give you a better systematic way of getting results, I would have to look at your program or look at your situation, look at the opponent that you may be up against, and then help you from there. Another place you can find overload training is in resistance training. So when I'm talking about resistance training, I'm talking about sometimes talking about partner training. Sometimes I'm talking about using bands, rubber bands, and things of that nature, parachutes, ankle weights, things of that nature. But what happens is that you're actually using these things to kind of propel you in a certain direction or slow you down in a certain direction for a very specific reason, to help create a bit of strength where you have to kind of explode through to develop the ability to load your body and then quickly drive through the motion. It's all kinds of ways to use resistance training. But nonetheless, you still have to think about the movement from the combat sport that you're trying to mimic. And now when you start doing resistance training, because again, anytime you start adding apparatuses to your body, you have to be careful because you don't carry that weight around. If it's weights, you're not used to that level of resistance. Sometimes the resistance can be your training partner. So you have to be careful because you don't normally carry that weight around. So there's very little to no progression. So you have to kind of think like this, like, we want to go to level 10, then pull it back 3. So we're really working at level 70, you know, level 7, so that we're not stressing the body too much. You know, we don't want to overdo it because you don't carry this weight around and it's not logical for you to add this weight on every day. But let's say you're using a rubber band, and one of the drills I like to do is I take a training partner and have him bob and weave under a rubber band all the way to the end, and then in a speedy motion, work his jab going backwards. I let the band pull him going backwards so he develops speed in his footwork. So, but going forward, he's developing stability in his movement, and then he's developing mobility on the return and additional speed in that mobility. So that's how you can use examples of how you use resistance bands and things of that nature. But again, just like the actual weights that are attached to your body, you still have to be careful. You still have to take a look to make sure that you're not training, overtraining, and risking injury at that particular body part. And I would throw this one in, like, make sure that when you are overload training, regardless of what tool you use or training method you use, that you have more of a progressive system, so that you can build up, and then also more of a full body system. So no one particular area is going to be injured. Because remember, when you throw a punch, throw a kick, or whatever, it's not by itself. It's the entire body that's actually assisting in that movement. It's the core assisting in that movement. You know, so, and it's all about just finding that harmony where everything is working together. And it takes some time and effort to develop that. Let's take a look at, so your workload can be a form of overload. So in other words, you're not doing anything different. You're not adding any weights. You're not adding any resistance bands. But let's say that on a normal day when you come in, what do? You do 100 punches or kicks around. And that's what you like. That's what you do. That's what your coach likes you to do. That's what you do. You like 100 punches, kicks around. And then overload training can just be a matter of, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make that 200 kicks per round just to give you a little bit more work. And sometimes it doesn't have to be per round. It could be very specific rounds. Let's say you're a boxer and you're training for a 12-round fight, and you normally throw 100 punches around. Again, these are just examples. These not the actual numbers. because this would change based on who you are, who you're up against, what level of competition, pro, amateur, championship. But let's say it's 100 punches around. Well, that's going to put you in the neighborhood of 1,200 punches that you would naturally do at the end of the day. So using the concept of progressive training, week one, I probably want to add three specific rounds. So rounds 4, rounds 8, and rounds 12, I want you to do something in the neighborhood of 200 to 300 punches per round, just so you get used to the overload. And every week that passes, I add another round or I add another 100 reps or whatever it is. Doesn't really matter. All right. Because I can't accurately measure this without being there with you. So that's why I'm trying to give you an example of how the concept of overload just might work. So this is a simple example of just doing a little bit more. And it has nothing to do with, oh, we're just going to do 1,000 of whatever. And that seems to be the easiest mechanism that a lot of coaches will default to. It's just, oh, we're just going to do a bunch of them. And fight training is a lot more logical and scientific than that these days. I'll be right back.
Carolina Fight fans, get your popcorn ready for the most exciting local MMA event of the year, May 11. Support your local Carolina MMA fighters as Paris Artis, 6-1 Team Rock out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, faces Jonathan Martin, 5-2 out of Carolina Combat Charlotte, North Carolina, in one of the most anticipated fights in Carolina history for the Fight for It lightweight title. Fight for It 20 will be one of the most exciting combat sporting events in local Carolina cage fighting history. Live cage fights Saturday, May 11th at the Kerr Scott Building in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Going to the red corner, winner, Krista McRae.
3-0, Krishan McRae. I kind of agree.
It looks like Krista won the belt.
I'm gonna need to see that young man fight for a belt. Who is the 155 kickboxing champion for Fight For It currently?
Marcelo. It looks like he won the belt.
I saw our 145 champ rooting for you. He said March 16th. You willing to accept a title fight?
Yes. Yes, I'm not turning down nothing. Let's go. March 16th, put me in there, and I'm getting that belt.
That's my man, Krishan McRae. He's going to be fighting May 11th, fighting for the 145 title. He was supposed to fight Ryan Taylor, but Ryan, I guess he's got a lot going on. He's going to vacate that title, leave it open. He may come back to it, but he's going to vacate that title. And it is Dakota Gray who is going to step in and fight for that title as well against Krishan McRae. Both men deserve it. But Krishan is definitely he's the showman. He's the guy that's going to put butts in the seats. And this fight is in Raleigh, North Carolina. And Krishan's out of the Greensboro area. That's not too far from Raleigh it's in a different direction, but it's about an hour away. So this is actually good that he's able to bring a crowd with him. He is going to fill those rafters, fill those seats up, and just understanding styles. Dakota's a bit more technical, and Krishan's the actual, he's the fighter. He's the fighter. He's going to bring the pain, and we're going to know everything that Dakota Gray is made of on that particular night. We're going to find out real quick what that young man has in him taking on Krishan McRae. Back to overload. So we talked about resistance bands. We talked about weights. We talked about your workload. Talk about time. So one of the keys to understanding time when it comes to your workloads is understanding, like, you're doing more reps for the allotted amount of time that you have. Now, what makes this different than the previous concept that we're talking about is that we don't know exactly how many reps we're able to produce, because we're going to do it for every round now. every round. So we want more reps. So it comes from the basic idea of you can only get stronger by doing the same amount of work for a longer period of time, which means more reps, or you can do the same amount of work, but in a shorter period of time. So here, this is one we're manipulating. We're talking about time. We're talking about being able to go balls to the wall. And what you're looking for is you're looking for variables. Cause so let's say we're doing 12 rounds. What you'll notice is the first 3 to 4 rounds, and it all depends on your body type. You're a mesomorph, ectomorph, endomorph, whether you explode a lot, where your game or your sport requires more interval work. What you will notice is that there's a different balancing act when it comes to every athlete. But generally speaking, I will notice athletes will kind of go, they will maintain a high rate for about 3 to 4 rounds. Let's say it's just punching. And you might be doing something in the neighborhood of 600 to 800 punches per round. But then the next round, the next 2 or 3 rounds, it drops off. Let's say it's down to 200. And then the last 4 rounds is kind of a progressive thing where you go 100, 200, 300, back up to 400. Or in some cases, it's more of an interval thing where those last 4 rounds, it'll be 200, 100, 600, 400 to get back to the beginning. You are going to have some drop off. It all depends on what the coach is after. It all depends on the workload. But there's no way to be 100% all the time. So the coach should come in and understand, okay, we have a window of performance that we want to work from. 85%, 70%, whatever it is for that particular round, that particular day, there's a window. Because again, if that coach has monitored you for the entire camp, or he's responsible for monitoring you the entire camp, he should know where the breaking point is so that you don't get injured. So time can become an important factor in terms of how to overload and do it in such a way that you don't receive an injury. That kind of is the key. That's the biggest clue. Then my last example for improving your workload, or training with overload, progressive overload, is increasing your difficulty. So difficulty can come in all kinds of forms, right? But what most people think difficulty is like, oh, we take a guy who's training for his first fight and we put him in there against the world champion. That's difficulty. Okay, that might be lunacy. And the reason being is because the champ has no invested interest in this young athlete. The champ might hurt him. And so then we're working backwards. We're not improving the skills and the abilities and talents of this young athlete. We're just putting him in a situation where he's going to develop insecurities. So when it comes to difficulties, this can be something along the lines of his technical skills and his fight IQ. So you may say, hey, I want you to spend this round trying to use your jab more. And, or you may even actually limit his other tools and say, okay, you can't cross hook and uppercut. So what I want you to do is just use the jab exclusively and only use the other tools when it's absolutely necessary, when you have to get out of trouble. So you're creating difficulty so that the fighter gets used to dealing with a stressful situation and will eventually find a way to work his way out. Another way to increase the difficulty is say, okay, I want you to spar this round, spar this guy, but you can only stay on the inside. In other words, I only want to see a jab when you're close. I only want to see an uppercut, a hook, or whatever. You can come up with the different criteria for different reasons at different times for different purposes, but you're putting the fighter in a situation where they don't have the advantage of all of their tools, and you're trying to develop skill for a particular reason, a particular purpose. And when you do that, what you will notice is that the fighter will develop a high level of fight IQ on the back end. You will notice this fighter starting to become more aware. He can see more, or she can see more. They make better reads. And from the internal perspective, they start to gain a lot of confidence. So overload training is very helpful for not only just developing the body, the physical body. In other words, the athlete will tell you themselves, I feel stronger. I feel faster, you know. But the biggest thing is that they will actually develop that internal confidence. And that's what you want to have from all of this training. Overload training has nothing to do with just trying to be bigger, stronger, faster than your opponent. There's no way to know that, because your opponent might be doing a lot of overload training himself. And some fighters can overload in a way that they're overtrained. They're over. I think Jigoro Kano was big on talking about, you know, developing symmetry in your body through your training. I have liked to take that and expound it and say you should also develop symmetry when it comes to your skills. There should be a balancing when it comes to your overall skills. And the reason I say that is because let's say you go out and you pack on a lot of muscle that allows you to lift a lot of objects, but the competitor that you're up against makes you fight in a different way. He doesn't worry about your upper body. You know, remember the story of how Gracie Jiu-Jitsu kind of came about? And one of the legendary stories was that there was a competitive team that went to this tournament and they pulled guard. All these guys did was pull guard because they didn't have the throwing capabilities of some of the other gyms. So they pulled guard and they were able to defeat these guys and beat them by submission because they didn't have the throwing technique. So what good does it do you to spend all this time working on a particular technique or developing strength in a certain way if you're not in the range or in the arena where it's going to give you greater benefit? So that's something to always keep in mind. Like, think about all the, when mixed martial arts first started and we would see all the amazing guys with footwork, but once they got taken down, they couldn't use it for any reason. It didn't help them get out of the situation when they were mounted or side mounted or being ground and pounded. So that's the kind of thing you want to think about when it comes to your overload training, all the weightlifting training you're doing, all the resistance bands and all this stuff. It has to be relevant to the situation. Who are you fighting? What are you fighting for? What is your overall goal? Where do you want to end up inside of that cage? Do you want to end up on the ground? Do you want to have that person up against the cage? You can also train your overload training based on defense. A lot of times when we think about overload training or any type of training in the martial arts, we oftentimes think offense, offense, offense. But a lot of these training mechanisms also can be applied to your defense. Because here's an analogy I gave one of the coaches last night. I said, if my jab, my single jab is better than all of your boxing, then I've got nothing to worry about. And the same thing can be said, like, no matter how great your offense is, if my defense can match it, then what do you do against my offense? Because my defense is just as good as your offense. So a lot of times you will notice athletes will put so much credit into what they do and then accidentally diminish what it is that their training partner or opponent can do. And when you do that, that's the mistake in your training methodology, your way of thinking. Now this person can defend what you do. What do you do at the end when you have no tools, you have no weapons? So that's what you have to be pay attention to. You want to be attentive to that idea, like, I've got to have weapons that impact this person. I was watching a couple fighters fighting that are fighting this weekend on UFC 301, and Jonathan Martinez, just watching one of his last fights, and it hit me, like, you know, as he was kicking his opponent, the opponent could not stop it. The opponent was trying to land punches, he was trying to close the distance, but regardless of how good his striking ability may have been, regardless of how good his clinching and takedown ability may have been, it was too late. He let Jonathan Martinez to kick his leg too much, too often, too soon. And then when it was time to engage with his real athletic skills, well, he didn't have the strength and the attributes to initiate. And that's what you have to pay attention to, is no matter how good you are at the thing that you love doing, the timing can be mixed up. The timing can be all wrong. So when you're doing your training, make sure you know what you're training for. Offense, defense, and counter-offensive skills. All types of training mechanisms that goes into your training. I'm going to hit this promo one more time. I'm still going to be promoting the Fight For It fight between Paris Artis and Jonathan Martin for the rest of this week, going into next week. Fight For It 20 is May 11th at this Kerr Scott Center and Kerr Scott Building in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Carolina Fight fans, get your popcorn ready for the most exciting local MMA event of the year, May 11th. Support your local Carolina MMA fighters as Paris Artis, 6-1 Team Rock out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, faces Jonathan Martin, 5-2 out of Carolina Combat Charlotte, North Carolina, in one of the most anticipated fights in Carolina history for the Fight For It lightweight title. Fight For It 20 will be one of the most exciting combat sporting events in local Carolina cage fighting history. Live cage fights Saturday, May 11th at the Kerr Scott Building in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Get better. There isn't any of us that can't get better. So turn on this whole idea of personal development and personal growth. That was what my teacher shared with me that changed my life. Starting a few steps from here at that convention. I'm telling you, for things to get better, you got to get better. Don't ask for it to change out there. Ask for you to change here. Don't ask for a more favorable wind. We call that naive. Don't ask for better seed, better soil. This is the only planet you got. Just ask that you can get wiser and stronger and better and be able to take care of your own responsibilities. Get better. Learn how to handle the seasons better. Let's go through them. Just get better at handling the winters. You can't change the winter. You can't change the seasons, but you can change yourself.
Tonight. Emotions literally are nothing but tonight. Physiological storms in our brains, tonight. If you will. There are only so many things you can tonight. Consciously focus on. And I want to congratulate you tonight. For your continuing commitment to do whatever it takes tonight. To consistently feed your mind and challenge tonight. Yourself. Where are we on a scale from 0 to 10? Tonight. 10 being absolutely empowered, unstoppable, tonight. Passionate. 0 being dead. Tonight. And noticing, are we at the appropriate level for what we want tonight. To accomplish? Is to control and direct tonight. The focus of your mind.
Tonight. Control and focus your mind. Very important stuff. Very important. Okay, so I'm wrapping it up. Hit me up on the Facebookie, the Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Those are my primaries. That's where I'll respond. If you want to talk more about overload training, especially when it comes to mixed martial arts, generally speaking, a lot of this can still be applied to just about any combat sport. But I think I spent more time learning it when it came to just martial arts in general. My coach, Steve Whittle, was probably the most influential when it came to teaching me how to train and use training methods from other fields like basketball, baseball, football, as well as weightlifting, and then mixing martial arts in a very concise and very specific way. But I am Coach Sess, and you've had words with the Mad Coach.
Shell Shock BJJ located in Fuquay Arena, NC. We offer jiu-jitsu, MMA, and kickboxing classes to men, women, and children. We will match our instructors to your level of experience. We are dedicated to providing a safe and productive environment because at Shell Shock BJJ we believe, not all family is blood. Find us online at fuquay-varina-martial-arts.com. Schedule an appointment by calling 919-518-5204. If you are looking for the home of the four major combat sports, then you are looking for Fight For It. Experience the action from Fight For It 17 on YouTube. Relive Josh Motzinger vs. Shelton Sayles. Watch Brent Williams defend his 135-pound title. Witness the best competitors in the youth divisions of kickboxing and MMA. Feel the excitement from Fight For It 17 held at the Grady Cole Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Also, you can follow the action on the Fight For It Facebook and Instagram pages. Team Rock Fayetteville, North Carolina offers services in various combat sports and real-world training for civilians and military forces alike. Team Rock has produced a long history of champions and has trained multiple fighters who have fought in Cage Fury Fighting Championships, King of the Cage, Bellator and the UFC. Call 910-487-8326 for more info or email us at teamrock.fayette@gmail.com.